like a regular Boston whisker plug?
It's not really regular. I mean, it's set up a minimum, maximum, or minimum, maximum, how do you call that? First quarter and third quarter. Four, I think. Five.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this, which is usually minimum first quartile, second quartile, maximum is now 90th percentile, 95th, 99th, and maximum.
Oh.
Right. And this line here is the average.
But they are not, you said they are not necessarily monotonically increasing, right?
Well, the percentiles they do, right? Of course. And of course. So they work well. But in the case of the average, it's different, right? I mean, slow.
What I was thinking of, maybe this is sort of very hard to, it's counterintuitive for you to have, but what you could have, for instance, was, I was thinking you could have something like this, right? Right, so this could be median, and then 95th, and then 99th, something like that.
I mean, why would you like to have that instead of this?
Because the other one is a regular box and whisker, right? So that's more for, so what you're doing is this, right? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, but what I'm doing here is, this is 90, this is 95, 99, and that.
Yeah.
And the thing is that the other problem is that the median is always zero.
Is always zero?
Always.
For all of them?
For all of them. So it doesn't make sense to have a median. But I haven't checked, but I'm pretty sure it's always zero.
The,
because
the median can be zero, that's true.
And because the 50. There are most of the periods of 10 milliseconds doesn't have page clock.
Okay.
Right? And I'm sure it's more than 50%.
Okay. So what happened to some of these boxes?
These boxes, what it means is that the 90th and 95th percentile is zero, right?
What about this line in between?
This line is the average. Like, this line is the same.
Oh, it's the average.
Yeah.
And that's a little confusing.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But.
And average can be higher, of course, than the 95th.
This is, I guess, the most weird, right, which is that the 90th, 95th, and 99th percentile are zero, but the maximum is this high. So you have an average right here.
You know, I haven't read this, so I just by looking at the plot, I thought they were just regular box plots. You know?
Yes, that was the reason why I didn't want to do the box plot. But I guess we need to be really clear, right?
That's why I said, I mean, I suggested for you to have like one-sided box plots rather than have both-sided.
Yes, that makes more sense.
I mean, I can remove the 90th percentile.
So what you have just 90,
so what I can
90
do
is
just
99 and max or something like that.
90 is 95.
And why not just stack bar
95. So these two will be the same. So at the end you will have a box like this. Let me see, the problem with the stacked, I had one problem with the stacked version.
Because what it means, what the box means here.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if we were using something like a median or average somewhere, then the box would make sense, right? Because if you don't have that,
I mean, I'm using the average.
You're using the average.
The thing is that the average never lies within this, right? Because it's very skewed.
Yeah, so...
I mean, the average will always be between 23, 25, and 75, for example.
No, actually lower.
No, the average will always be there.
No.
I mean, yeah, but that's the definition of it. I mean, between 25 and 75, the average will always...
Median.
That's median.
Median. Yeah. Average can be higher than 90% or even
first.
Yes, that's
median.
Right? Yeah.
But the average is...
The average could be any. Yeah.
But what Louis is saying, most of the median values are zero.
Yeah. Right? I'm pretty sure all of them are, but I have to check.
It's good that all of them are zero. That's how we...
Yeah, and it makes sense, because what it means is that what I was saying, that for most of the 10 millisecond ranges, more than 50% of 10 millisecond ranges doesn't have any base fault, which makes sense, right?
Yeah. The problem is that the patterns are not monotonic in any way. Sometimes the average is lower than the 95th percentile, other times it's higher than the 99th percentile. So it's hard to sort of make a graph out of this.
I know it's really hard to plot this, but wouldn't it be nice, let's say, to have for each workload, like,
what is that? Well, we also have different memory sizes.
Yeah, but I mean the
90th percentile.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's we have four different configurations for each workload, right?
Yeah.
Four different sizes of memory.
That's why we have four box slots.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, bunch of lines here. I don't know.
Yeah, that's. I don't know. I mean, then we need to compress the figure so much that it's hard to read the figure.
Yeah.
I mean, we need a microscope to read the figure.
I was thinking about the bar graph.
Stacked bars, right?
Yes.
The problem is not monotonic. There is no monotonic pattern. Sometimes the average is below the 95th and sometimes above the 99th.
Exactly, that's a problem. So if we want to do a stack bar, then we can show the these percentiles in one stack and the average on another stack. Another bar graph. But then it will take more space on this, right? Because we have, for each workload, we should have...
So we can have, maybe we can have stacked bars with, instead of showing average, we can show median, which is all zeros, which, you know, and we want to show that also. Then we can show 90th percentile, which, again, is all zero.
No.
90th percentile. Sometimes
the 90th percentile is this one.
Sometimes zero, sometimes it's not, and then the 95th and 90th.
Actually, most of them, the 99th percentile is not zero. This is the only one that is zero. Otherwise, it's not.
So you have, this is 25th, 75th percentile?
No, it's instead of a usual box,
I mean. 90th, 95th, 99th, and max. And those would be monotonically increasing, right?
Yes,
so you have medium,
course.
90th, 95th, 99th, and max will be monotonically increasing.
Yes.
So maybe we should just show that.
I mean, there is no point in showing the median. Just saying
median values are all zeros, so we don't need to
show that. We make the y-axis from minus 1 to infinity, but that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So median we don't need to show. We just show 90th, 95th, 99th, and max could be stacked bars. Or it could be a one-sided box and whisker.
And the average we don't show at all.
Yeah. I guess we could...
How do you show the average?
Yeah. It's just a line.
Like that line?
Those are the white lines over there.
Okay.
Which is confusing because sometimes the line overlaps with the box and then...
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
I think either this way, like have something like this, or just a regular stacked bar.
But
yeah,
indeed, I mean, but
that one
here,
part
you can have a line, let's say a line. That's the
average. Show the average?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that could work, yeah. Actually, that could work.
You know, stacked body, yes, that would
work. So, that could work. So, it's something similar to this. But we have just a line, right? A thick line
that
shows where the average is.
Mm-hmm.
that could work. Yeah. The problem with that is that
it wouldn't work in this one.
Actually, yeah, actually we'll occupy the same space if we assume that each
is
attack is a bar, yeah.
Yeah. It should work okay, I guess.
But then the legend would be huge, right?
The other is how do we okay, so you have on the x axis you have to sort of mark them as 50th 90th, 95th, 99th and max. The percentage of memory on the x axis.
That's a problem, yeah. Because here it's
using different boxes.
That's just the legend. So each box type is a memory size.
Which is fine. I think you can put that in the x axis. Like 90th, 95th, 99th and max. Sorry, what am I saying? The percentage of memory, 20, 25, 33 and 50.
Right.
You can put that in the x-axis.
Yeah, I don't think, I don't know how easy it is to do that in NL+.
I think we've done that before, right?
I think so, but that was, had to work a lot with that. Anyway, I think we did it for Borg, but I have to check.
You can copy that.
Yeah. But I think it was a tricky one. I don't know if we can reuse that. It was something, I don't remember that, but...
Yeah, but this one is a little bit confusing. I mean, when I looked at it, I was very confused.
It's not easy to show this data, right? Because it's really unusual.
So whichever really is the least confusing, we have to go with that. And I think the stacked bar might be less confusing than this one. We could do the one-sided box and whisker, which is sort of more appropriate.
Yeah, but because that I don't know... I don't see how... Well, actually, we can. It's fine. Doing this line. Yeah, but then the median doesn't make any sense, because the median would make the box zero, obviously.
Yeah. So there won't be any box, really.
Yeah.
Well, actually... No, the median will be zero. Mm-hmm. But then... The top part of this box could be, we could mark this as 95th and then 90th, 95th. So this wouldn't be median, this would be median. It would be 90th, 95th.
Here it is.
And ninth. So you could do this one also, but then you cannot show the average.
No, I prefer the stack part. Yeah. Also, this took a complete day. Yeah, to do. Really hard. Anyway, I think I can produce some
software. Okay, so I guess this is the result. I guess the other thing is the results that you got, right? On Monday.
I also the spreadsheet. Right. I share
I saw that spreadsheet, but I haven't really.
I think I couldn't think of any other data I have so far, apart from calculating the energy consumption, which I haven't done yet.
So this one is stats. The stats is telling me how many percentage of page faults have writes, percentage of memory hits tells me how many, also tells me how many percentage of page faults.
Right? Yeah.
So most of those are about 90, which is good, and most of them are about 97. There are a couple which is PM, postmark, large, which is 94%. So there are very few writes during page faults, right?
Yeah, actually I found
that's good.
That's good. Previous implementations I had a lot, so I guess something got resolved.
You're still using LRU, just basic LRU?
Just basic LRU. So in theory, with the other implementation should be less.
What is the, do we know percentage of reads versus writes? Do we know that?
What do you mean?
I mean load versus store in the original.
We could know that, yeah. I mean based on the traces.
Yes, I would expect that the percentage of
also,
this would, right?
Yeah.
But but then there is a background cleaning process that
there is also
cleaning stuff.
Yeah, but this is only page faults. This only is writes due to page faults. These are
correct.
Not complete
writes. So let's assume that there is no cleaning. If we assume that, then there is no other way for pages to get cleaned except when they get they need to be written out.
Mm-hmm.
So then the percentage of page faults that cause writes should be reflecting more or less the amount of writes in the original workload.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense or no? Because we are using pure LRU.
Mm-hmm.
So when we use pure LRU, when we pick a page to be replaced, the probability that it is dirty should depend
on the ratio
on the read-write. Ratio on the read write ratio.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true or?
I think it's true. That makes sense, right? I mean, if you have 100% right, then you always have that page dirty.
Because that would be a good story to tell, to say that, well, if you don't have cleaning, then you do a lot more writes during page fault. We are minimizing that by doing background cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
So we reduce page fault latency.
I see. Yeah, it would be nice to have an experiment.
Is that
to
the,
evaluate
the straw man, right?
No, but even in the straw man, we have a flushing mechanism because that's separate.
Oh, there is a flushing in straw man?
Yeah, of course, because the thing is that flushing is separate from allocation. So you can have flush with any type of allocation, and straw man is one of them.
And then you can also have no flush, right?
And then you can have, well, I guess we can change that. At this point, I'm not doing anything. I'm always having flush, but probably it's a good idea to see the effectiveness of flushing by having flushing active or not.
And we can do that with, perhaps we can do that with strawman and with log and cleaning for one of the workloads, right?
Yeah.
To see how flushing impacts the latencies.
Okay.
Because I'm guessing that there are more writes in these workloads than what these percentages tell us here. I mean, most of these percentages are 0.1% for writes during page fault. We can simply calculate the percentage of writes from the workload, right, directly.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you have execution times also in here.
Yeah. So I have all the memory-only, order, and conservative. Usually memory-only and order are pretty much the same. They don't change much. While the conservative is including the IOs, right?
How much is the percentage change here, I guess, that would be?
What is the ratio between memory-only and
conservative? Conservative is the worst case for us. I mean, in this case, it seems like it's more than 10%, more than 20%, perhaps, or 15%.
Mm-hmm.
Or Ruby's web. For Ruby's all, also, it's more than 10%.
Yeah.
Postmark SL is also substantial, 5%, I guess.
What about HSQL?
HSQL is
usually.
That's about 10% also.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all about 10%.
There's a huge gap there, I mean, between 20 and 25.
Yeah, but then after 25, it stabilizes.
No,
this is all 25.
Oh,
25.
Yeah,
but
that's with different, I guess that would be different flash allocation mechanism. Forgot to put that.
So you can add that information also.
Yeah.
And then 33 and 25, there's not much difference. And then 33 to 50, there is big difference.
Mm-hmm.
So even with 50% memory, there is still execution time increases, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with ordered mode, this seems like everything is the same.
Yeah. They're always able to catch up with the with the memory on the sizes.
Because there is sufficient idle time.
There is sufficient idle time.
For almost all these workloads. Or all these workloads.
Actually, all of them. I would say, yeah.
In the worst case, we have 10% degradation of execution time.
Yeah.
10 to 15. Because I think one of these is 15% also. The Rubis web. Actually, these numbers are reasonably good. And then there are these overhead writes.
Those are due to cleaning or flush.
And overhead reads.
Those are only due to cleaning, right? Because you have to read the segment. Yeah, which there was something that I found is that also we have a number of overhead reads. Oh, I see. No, it doesn't make sense. Anyway, we have overhead reads. We don't have segment erasures. So that was.
There are no segment erasures?
No. I don't know why. There should be one, right? Because
I thought last time you said the average segment erasure was 2 or something.
No, that was in the worst case.
Mm.
So it's the one with the highest erasure counter, which is Ruby's, is the one that had 2. But for the rest was 0.
Where is the erasure counter?
There is no erasure counter there. After that.
Okay.
Probably, well, I guess I had to make estimation of all the...
Mm.
Because, I have it per segment.
You print it out per segment.
Per segment.
Okay. It seems like this guy, XALA and Xalan, which is XML related, I guess.
I don't know.
I think this is XML related, which is the one of the largest applications. It's 124 times 4K. That's
the footprint.
It's huge, isn't it? Times 4, 124, 415 times 4K, right?
Yeah, that's the number of bits. That's 400,000K, which is 500 megabytes, more or less.
500 megabytes, yeah, that's one of the bigger ones. And the HSQLDB are also pretty big.
Yes.
So, oh wow, this is the biggest one. Postmark
SL. Yeah, that is weird. I don't understand that.
What does SL mean?
A small number of files.
But large files.
But large files. Exactly. Right? Remember?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it's very weird because it's... lot bigger than the other one.
And you repeat that?
And I repeat it to check. And I got.
And you repeat the other one?
Yeah, I repeat it every
That's weird.
But this is interesting data. I think, I mean, it's good to be putting all of this in this spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And there is more that you're going to add, right?
One is
configuration or something like that. And
the allocation... Flash allocation.
Flash allocation, and then...
it was also
the
number... No, the number of segment ratios.
You should have latency per request, right? At the end.
Latency per request, what do you mean? Remember, this is a single number thing.
Average latency, then?
Average latency.
You could put that also.
Average latency.
one thing is execution time, another is
average memory access latency might be a good thing to add here also. I mean, it's not representative because the distribution could be very, very different than the average.
Yes.
But it's still good to have some summary metric.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, because that relates to, I mean, we have these two types of workloads, right? One, the transactional, request-based, and others that are batched. For those batch, we care about execution time. For the transactional, we care about individual response times, right?
Okay. Average latency. Okay.
I guess the other thing which we talked about was to put the percentage of reads and loads and stores in the original trace.
That's also what we have here, right? Read-write ratio.
Read-write ratio.
Of memory accesses.
Yeah.
Okay.
But these numbers are very good, I mean, very encouraging. These ones are also reasonable. I think for most cases, we don't have too much of overhead. I think in most cases, we have maybe 1 or 2% delay in execution time, but sometimes we have as much as 15%.
Mm-hmm. So if we have 15%, it means that if we run these applications again and again and again and again, that 10% can accumulate, right?
Yeah, that's right. So what this means is that if there's a conservative mode of replay, which means that every memory access is dependent on the previous memory access, then the execution of the application execution time can increase by even 15%.
Yeah, so that means if there is an increase, we are not able to catch up.
That doesn't mean that. Well, we are able to catch up with the ordered mode, right? Conservative replay mode says every memory access dependent on the previous memory access, which is rarely the case.
Okay. Well, why is it rarely?
That would be true only for, let's say, a single-threaded application. And in those sorts of applications, yes. We have the worst case. In single-threaded applications, every memory access would depend on the previous memory access because you cannot run an instruction without.
Yeah.
Well, there is still some parallelism, right? If you have hyper-threading, then the compiler can do things in parallel.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily true that every memory access, even for a single-threaded application, is dependent on previous.
Yeah.
I think something that we have in our favor is that usually now applications are multi-thread, right? Mainly because you have many cores in one single chip. So.
But what Raju said is extreme. Even if you have only one thread of the system, the hardware will parallelize. I mean, it can go ahead, right?
Right. That's right.
But there are some limits there, right? How much you can go ahead. You cannot go ahead arbitrarily because at some point there will be a dependency and you have to stop.
Yeah.
And those are sort of some of the hidden aspects of our work, right? I mean, we need to talk about them, certainly. We haven't yet discussed them, but with single-threaded applications,
so we have this, the order, the other is, what's the name of the other one?
Conservative,
and you have the third one, which is really
aggressive.
Sending the memory request the moment they are.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Well, conservative is even worse than what I told you, because conservative says that if I have a memory access.
You make it at the exact same time?
No, that's ordered.
That's
right?
Ordered.
That's ordered. With conservative, what I'm saying is that if my memory access is delayed, everything else is going to be delayed by that amount, right? All future memory references, which is not necessarily true for even single-threaded applications.
Remember that we made a figure of that to understand those types of.
Yeah.
We have that figure somewhere.
No. Probably you do.
Because that figure was clear for me to understand.
It's not really complicated. No,
I mean, because we have a third one, right?
Third one is aggressive, which means memory access always issued at the time.
So
exactly. In the original
and there is no dependency between them. So you can have multiple page faults happening at the same time. So at the end, the thing is that that aggressive mode is exactly the same as the memory only. Right?
Mm-hmm. That's true. Pretty much, that's true. Right. And these are numbers in what? Are seconds or what? These numbers?
Seconds.
Seconds?
Yeah. So we need to show some like latency in terms of when the original request was made, right?
Yes.
Not only the time not only the time it takes to actually make the request, but how much it has been shifted from the time it was originally made.
That's shown in the execution time. I mean, that's sort of captured in the execution time.
Yeah, but it could be that we have bursts. And at the end, we're able to catch up and we have zero overhead in execution time.
That's the order, right?
But
the conservative.
But some requests have to wait a lot.
That's the order.
No, that's not ordered. For bursty, ordered will not tell you that there was some request that had to wait for a long time. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Because ordered would eventually catch up.
Right.
Conservative, when there is burst, then everything else gets pushed out. Yeah, everything else either.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so that's giving you this shift.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to imagine is, let's say this was a web server or something, how much each request will have to wait? Let's say you only have two really huge bursts in the execution, so you might be shifting by half of the execution.
The problem with this sort of a study is very hard to find out user perceived response times, because for a user request, you have so many memory accesses, right? And then you take a much longer time than a single memory access. Here we are talking about how much does each individual memory access get impacted by.
Yeah, so if we show that each memory access is impacted by some time that's not perceived by humans, something good, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have in our latency distribution graphs, I think we saw there were some discrepancies in the numbers, right? There was.
Oh, in terms of the percentage of page faults and
the CDF.
And the CDF. Yeah.
So the percentage of page faults are also here?
Yeah, because we have the percentage of memory hits, right?
Yeah.
Why are we caring so much about execution time and not latency? That's really my point.
No, we are caring about latency, right? We are showing the distribution of the latency. There are two aspects to the evaluation. One is the execution time.
And latency.
Yeah, but we spent all of Monday talking about latency, right?
Yeah, well, but that was for the cold bandwidth thing. No. Oh, fine. Okay.
So remember that we had all these CDFs. I don't know if you got a chance to look at those. Those were all the latency CDFs for the actual experiments.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So there, I mean, the CDF should have these look actually better than the CDFs.
Yeah.
Right? So I wonder what's going on with the CDFs.
And that latency is measured as just the time it takes to make the request, or these compared to the original IO, to the original issue type.
Say that again?
I mean, let's say somebody makes a request at time T, and you start to make the request time T plus something, and it takes you this amount of time. So later
on, what is this and what is this?
Okay, that's better. I mean, this is time, this is issue, this is start and this is end of the request. Latency is this or latency is this?
What do you mean by issue? The issue is the timestamp you gave me
in the request, yes.
And what is the difference between issue and start?
Because the start of actually making the request can be delayed, right?
You mean delay because of page fault?
Delay because it couldn't, because something else was going on here. It cannot write the request.
Like, yeah. What?
Has to be like, page fault.
Has or to be a page fault, or you are, or something, or there is some dependency.
I see.
Or there is dependency. This cannot be issued because there is order.
Right. So it's from start.
From start.
Yeah.
So it should be this one, right?
Should be the issue.
Yes.
But the issuing time is also changing, depending on whether you're using ordered replay mode or conservative replay mode or so on, right?
No, but the issue time is an issue by the outside world. In some workloads.
Not necessarily. Yeah, in some workloads, yes. In some workloads, that's true, which are open loop workloads. But most real workloads are closed loop workloads.
No, no, most real workloads will be that the system does something because of some network access, some interruption,
true,
some input.
I think there's a discussion I had with someone recently, I don't know who, but so although it might appear that workloads are open loop, and this is after I spoke to Ajay, right, so he sort of convinced me also. In the end, it turns out that most workloads are closed loop because of the fact that you have limited amount of resources. So think about a web server. Web server has requests coming in at any time, right? But then the fixed amount of resources is going to dictate when and if the request gets handled.
Yes.
Right? So if I don't have resources to handle your request, I'm going to drop your request. So the fact that whether your request gets serviced depends on what else happening in the system.
Okay, so we might end up dropping too many requests.
It's possible
which is even worse.
But wait,
yes,
so
possible.
Actually I think from I to E it's accounted in the conservative case.
When you measure execution time, that's what you're saying.
That is accounted for in the execution time, but I guess your point is we should also account for it in the latency.
Yes.
But it's not clear whether I would still be the issue time in the conservative mode because of dependencies
yes.
of the closed loop way of.
But
so I don't know what is the right way of.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is the worst case.
Yes, but I'm saying, I mean, this is a system.
I make a
request into the system. Will I be delayed because of this optimization?
The question is, why are you making that request, right?
Because it's a web server and I want to make the request.
No. But what I'm saying is, does that request depend on some other request?
It doesn't.
Okay, that's the worst case, that's
yes.
what I'm saying. So if all the requests are independent from each other, then you should have that. But that's not, I mean, we don't know if that is true or not.
Actually, for pretty much all the workloads, there are a couple which are batched, like the these XML transformations and things like that.
I see what you mean. So you're saying that the latency has to somehow also account for the waiting time.
Yes.
Waiting time. So even if we assume, let's say, aggressive mode, right, the execution time remains exactly the same, but what happens to the latency? If some of these page faults are going to get queued up, and what is the impact to that latency? I think that's an interesting thing to look at. But we should look at it for the aggressive mode, not for the conservative mode, because for the conservative mode, we're already saying that they're dependent, and that's why you have to wait for such a long time.
Okay, so the thing is that, I see. So it seems like in the aggressive mode, we have, in some sense, the best case for
execution
time,
but the worst case
in response time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Correct. That's a very good observation.
Yeah.
So that's something, I'm glad we're thinking about this more deeply.
And in conservative mode, it's the other way around. We have the worst case for execution time, but the best case for response time, because we don't have anything else going on in the system.
Something else we're forgetting is that we make this distinction between aggressive and conservative and everything to some sense classify the type of workloads we have. So So we shouldn't be going back to looking at work.
Actually,
we should look at the classification we have.
I don't think it was for classification. Well, the way I see it was to give a lower bound and an upper bound of what
yes.
would be the best case for our system and the worst case for our system.
Okay, yeah.
Right? So it's not... We cannot really classify any workload in any of these two cases, right?
But we know that some workloads are more here than here.
Probably, yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's hard to do that, I think.
But that's a... I think that's a really great point. So we need to measure, sort of have a new CDF for the aggressive mode.
I see.
Where we take into account the latency of completion with respect to the original issue time, not the time at which we send it to actually handle it in the simulator. Right. And that, I guess, is that easy to calculate? I mean, do you have data for that or to post-process this thing, or you need to run experiments?
When you calculate the response time of a specific request, you subtract the S, right? But at that moment, you have the I.
Hmm.
What's that? Say that again?
I mean, when you calculate the difference, you subtract this by this, but at the moment you're subtracting, you are in the context where you have this I.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, one thing is that I don't have the response time of the memory. I only have the response time of the
I. Yes, let's say memory is zero. We don't have it. I don't know what assumption we're making.
No, we are, for memory, we are assuming that we have a distribution and we are sampling from that distribution.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
For read and write.
Okay.
Separate.
So that's good. Okay.
So let me see how to calculate that. So for that, I need the issue, the timestamp in the trace. And, okay, and the timestamp in the real, in the simulation, and the end time in the simulation.
Yes.
Which are those three variables. So then what you want to do is to calculate E minus I.
Yes.
Do you have data for to calculate that, or do you have to run experiments again?
I think so, but there are a couple of things, right? This won't be exact because in the case of a real aggressive mode, you will have queuing in the I/O,
yes,
which will make things worse. And in this case, I'm not queuing anything, right?
No, you are queuing because you are accounting for the amount of time that the request has to wait by subtracting from the issue time.
Yeah, these might include the queuing.
No, but the thing is that I'm talking about the scheduler.
You're not queuing in the I/O scheduler.
You're assuming
like a no-op I/O scheduler, essentially.
Okay.
Right. So you can think of it as that way. Instead of queuing at the I/O scheduler, you're sort of delaying the request of dispatching, right? So, but the effect is pretty much the same as that of a no-op.
Okay. Yeah. Then I think it can work. Yeah. I think I have all the data, but I'm not pretty sure.
And for SSD, you don't need to do any scheduling, for read at least, right? The scheduling doesn't make any sense, so no op would work as good as anything else.
Yeah, I would check that, because probably if I don't have... I think that I'm missing the... No, actually, you know what? I have it, because I have the sequence number.
Yes.
So
okay.
With the sequence number, I have the timestamp in the original trace. At least that I have.
Oh, but you don't know what the start time is.
So I have this number, but I don't know if I have these two.
You need only one of them because you have the other one. You have the latency, right?
Oh, okay. I need only one of them. So I have the latency. Yeah. I don't know. I have to check.
But to calculate the execution time, you somehow need to have that information, right? For conservative, how do you do it?
No, for conservative, it's just a summation of all the I/O plus
all the memory.
Yeah.
Oh, so you can recreate S because you can do that, make that assumption and...
No, but I need to do it per request basis.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, so this is something, let's see whether we have data to get that, and if not, we should be, probably there is a reason to run it again to get this additional information.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So this is good, yeah, because aggressive is telling right now only one side of the story.
Yeah.
Right. It's just telling us, well, execution time remains unimpacted because all the requests are independent, but then that would impact latency.
I really don't know, but I mean, we never discussed again this issue of simulated time and things like that. Aren't we a little sloppy about that? I mean,
I think we need to get better at this, at describing all the different modes. I think the problem was, the reason we didn't talk about it much is because we already running out of space, but I think this is important. So we need to discuss this and maybe take out something else.
Because, I mean, the biggest complaint people may have is it's a simulated environment. So we need to be really careful about every little thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree. I think we
Where was the problem again?
I mean, for SDI especially, a big problem is that it's simulated, right?
Okay.
So we need to be really careful about these things, you know, simulated time, shifting, I mean, that we wouldn't have these issues in a real system, right? In a real implementation.
Yeah, we wouldn't. Yeah.
So we need to be really careful, I think, with that.
That's true.
I need to convince people that it's enough to have a simulation.
The thing is that what else can we do, right? That's the question.
No, at least convince ourselves, right?
I mean, I'm pretty convinced. What?
I mean, I wasn't before.
Right, we
agree. We need to sort of have some of those charts that we made with the simulation timeline and the three modes.
Yeah, I agree. But that we are doing that in the conservative order and aggressive train. That's what we had in that graph.
No, I'm saying not in the graph, but in the. Remember, we made all these different descriptions. In the diagram for how these different modes work.
Yes.
I think we need to have a diagram which actually describes that better.
Okay.
In the paper.
Yeah, I agree. But we are including that in these numbers. Right? That's my point. I mean, we don't need to do anything else.
I know. Yeah.
Okay.
So which means that we are.
I mean,
capturing
what you're saying
all of
that
those.
We need to explain that.
We need to explain that.
But we already thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I agree that we need to explain it. There are some parts of the paper which are probably less important than that.
Yeah.
Which I think it's okay. I mean, it has even some contribution in the memory replay area.
About the replay.
That's something new, I think.
About what I was saying about being sloppy is that in the replay, remember that we had issues about the real time and the virtual time and things like that?
No.
Oh, remember the discussions we had about that?
The virtual time because the I mean, we cannot replay at the same time of the trace.
Exactly.
So we have to slow down.
Yes. How we're considering that slowing down, and how that affects these sort of things. We never consider that stuff again.
Mm-hmm. But I'm doing that in the implementation, right?
Yeah, I'm sure, but the thing is that, I mean...
You're talking about the paper, not
the paper, exactly,
right?
The paper.
Yeah.
I mean, that...
We already wrote that.
I mean, those things need to be really, really clear so people can say, I mean... This is a simulation, but still it's taking care of, you know, all these things that...
I think you're right, yeah. We need to be very careful about the descriptions about the simulator.
Because there are no simulations on SDI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are simulations in other conferences, but not... OSDI, I cannot say that there are no simulations at all, but... There's typically some implementation also.
The other thing is that we need to have a good reason for not having a real implementation rather than being too hard.
Well, a good reason is that it's enough to have a simulation.
but that's not a good reason. I mean,
and if we show that we are rigorous and we are for every little detail.
No, but people can complain, right? People can say, yeah, but a simulation is never real, so you don't know.
But we won't give them reasons to complain because we are taking care of all these things.
But then people say your paper will be chartered if you have a real implementation. You don't have to take care of all this.
Yes.
A more comprehensive one.
Yeah.
So I think we need to have a better reason.
Like a different kind of justification.
Yes.
Yeah.
Something like we were hardware restricted somehow or...
I mean, having a simulation allows us to
do what?
To
yeah.
change the amount of memory.
The amount of memory,
yeah.
For instance, yeah. That's a good reason.
What else?
Latency analysis and things like that could be.
Latency analysis, yeah. And also.
What latency analysis?
The thing is that we cannot have a CDF of the memory response time with a. With a real implementation, right? That was one of the problems.
Right.
Why not?
How do you get every single? I mean, because for doing a CDF, you need a response time of every single memory item.
Let's say you make them fault and you increase this virtual time.
You get them fault. And you increase the virtual time. Make them fault. Why and how does that help?
I mean, have every memory access.
Oh, no, sampling.
How do you sample?
I mean, you don't consider every single memory request.
Okay.
You just consider a few.
Okay.
And for those, you analyze the whole path of what's going to happen.
The whole path?
Yeah. What the whole path means it's going to memory or it's going to an SSD.
Okay. Yeah, but it goes to oh, I see. Which is exactly what we're doing.
Yes. So in this case, it's better. I mean, our approach is better because we're considering the whole thing and we don't have to sample.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good reason too. We know about how many memory accesses there are in the system.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Relatively to how many.
Something else is that I mean, people wasn't able to do it in the past for simulation because I think. I mean, I haven't seen anything before of real traces for real workloads like a web server, you know, memory
yeah.
access traces.
No, there are.
I think
the closest is the
paper we're reading for a paper lab tomorrow. They have traces, memory traces, but they are really small, and they say that it's because it's really slow to run.
Yeah. We have traces that run for
several
hours
yeah.
right? So which is actually pretty good. But those guys are doing like full architecture simulation.
Yeah, yeah.
All
we don't need it. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't need all that.
Yeah.
In their case also, they don't really need all that, right? I mean, do they? In the micropages world?
I don't. I mean, they're studying things like per bank stuff, row buffer things. We don't care about that.
So. Yeah. Well, anyway, so that's a different thing.
Yeah. So
and that paper got published in ASPLUS, right?
Yeah.
So if OSDI doesn't take it, we send it to ASPLUS.
Yeah. Which I think is, it's a good timing. I think the acceptance date is just before the
mm-hmm.
ASPLUS.
Okay. Yeah.
Submission date.
Yeah, so that's a good point. I think we need to have good reasons for doing simulation and good reasons for not doing full system implementation.
Yeah, yeah. And also, and then justify what you were saying, right?
All
the details of
yeah.
the timing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that seems like a completely different paper from my point of view. Like,
It would be good to have a write-up and for the timing issues and the replay modes and all those descriptions
that need to be clear.
In a separate section.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we can figure out, well, how much should we focus on this? Or even we can actually create a new paper, right?
That's
and only summarize this part in this paper.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because it seems, I mean, we have, I think we could have one paper in how we collect traces, then how do you reply them, why it's good to replay, and
Yeah. So that can be one paper. I think we can have another potential paper after this. That has to be more, I guess, much more detailed and careful.
Like a receipt for somebody to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So Ricardo, maybe you can do a first version of that section.
Yeah, because we have data and everything.
I mean, for this.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, what I was going to suggest is have a write-up of some section.
Yes.
With the description of the virtual time and the simulation time and the different replay modes.
Yes.
In an independent section, and then we can figure out, you know, how much of that to use for this paper and how much of that to leave for the next one.
Yeah. So you can explain as much as well.
Yeah.
How about these? What are these things you use? Open loop system. What's that?
Loop and closed loop. So in open loop systems, so you always have this sort of terminology when you're analyzing request streams.
Okay.
Okay. So you have request streams coming in. They have to be serviced, and then there is some queuing in the system. There is some service delay, and so on. So in open loop systems, the request streams are completely independent of the service process.
Okay.
For instance, a single synchronous I/O thread is closed loop because it has to wait for the previous request to come before it can issue the next one. You can think of it in a much broader context in terms of requests that are coming into the system. So we sort of ignore requests that get dropped.
Okay.
Right? So requests that are coming into the system are in some sense eventually going to be dependent on how the system performs. So most systems, although the incoming request streams are maybe disconnected, but the request stream that the system sees is in some sense a closed loop because of the limited amount of resources that the system has.
So his argument was that systems are always closed loop.
That's what, you know, so I was talking to Ajay, what about open loop versus closed loop? And
it started because of this? No.
No, it started because of the basis. Basically.
Okay.
Right. And so I don't know how we got to that discussion, but anyway, eventually we were talking about this open loop and closed loop, and then he was basically arguing that at least for, I mean, we could take it to memory also, right? But we were talking about I/O, and he was saying that for I/O, for the storage system, they're all closed loop systems because, well, even if I have a web service with a lot of requests coming in, the server itself has a limited amount of resources. And for instance, if the server issues a whole bunch of I/O requests, it has to provision memory to actually pull that data in, and it has a limited amount of memory. So it cannot issue more requests until the first set of requests completes.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So something is a bottleneck. If you have Apache web server, which is multi-threaded, there is a upper limit on the number of threads that can exist at any given time, right? There is an upper limit on the amount of memory that you have, right? So all of those, in turn, result in these systems behaving as closed-loop systems, although they should ideally be open-loop.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
So, okay. Yeah, I don't know if we want to discuss that in this section, but maybe in some indirect way.
I mean, that's the key to this type of replaying we have.
Yeah.
It's pretty much just based on that.
I mean, Agresser is saying that it's a completely open-loop system.
Yes.
Well, the other one is saying that it's completely closed.
Yeah.
Yes. But we're assuming something in the middle.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly what it is.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, feel free to think creatively about how you want to write this out, and then we can go through revisions.
Okay.
And I think Lewis has the diagram which we had at that time, so you can look at it and...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I was looking for it, but I don't...
I think you should have it somewhere, because I remember you copying it.
Yeah, me too. But I usually copy everything here, so I guess...
Or we can come back and try to draw it again.
For instance, I guess it's not going to happen, but for instance, if we have two papers
right? One for the Harvard memory and one for the memory trace replay.
In referencing the NVIDIA submission.
Can we submit both to the same?
And reference one to
the I don't know. No, reference is not possible, right? But I don't know, something like that.
I mean, if it's non-blind submission, we can easily reference. But if it's blind submission, then we could still reference it.
Hmm.
We could still reference it. As long as we do not disclose the authors, we can still reference parallel submissions.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's looking good. Yeah. All these things looking really good.
Yeah. I think there's already one part of this paper that talks about the three modes of replay, so you can copy that into your section.
And I also, there was probably one paragraph that I talk about the virtual and real-time issues.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, but we need to really expand on these things.
Yes.
Right? Because right now they are not well described. And we also have audio for when we discuss this thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if we can find the picture, that's great. Else, maybe you can recreate the picture from the audio.
I remember you drawing some paper, in some draft of the paper.
Oh, yeah. I hope I didn't throw it. If I find it, I'll let you know, but most likely I don't think I'll...
Something like time is X, and we did something, and there were some symbols for issuing and waiting. And things like that.
Yeah, I don't think I have it here, but I also have some papers that usually... pulled papers out and I'm putting somewhere.
Oh, okay.
Probably coming somewhere.
I'll look for it.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, me too. So
find it out.
Okay. Have to talk to you.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess the CDS with the aggressive new CDS.
And some new data to add to the spreadsheet.
And I guess you need to do the power computations, right? The power consumption. Is that already done, or
are you going to
work on that next?
Yeah.
Okay, and so Ricardo, you can work on this.
Yeah, I need to finish the motivation figures.
Yeah. And I guess you're going to be busy with the other paper for the next few days anyway.
Yeah,
right, with the working
this, yeah, I was, last night I was fighting really with them. The thing again. I tried SUSE.
What?
Yeah.
It works better.
No, I cannot install SUSE. It crashes in the middle. Actually, it's very, I don't know if it's the problem of QEMU or whatever. It formats the file system and tries to mount it and it throws some errors.
But you're trying to install OpenSUSE in QEMU?
Yes. I don't know how to do.
And what paper is that?
The working set stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this ICAC paper, which got accepted, you said you had 3-week accepts.
You know, actually I checked two week accepts and one accept.
Oh, one accept. Oh,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
I see.
But you had three reviews.
Yes.
So there was only one round of reviewing. Okay.
Yeah.
Because the ABLE paper had 2-week accepts and 1-week reject.
Okay. No, but for ABLE, I don't think I can.
Is the right
It should go. I
think it should go to Usenix or FAST.
Yeah,
we sent it to FAST, right? It got rejected there.
What is the reason? Do they have, there is a reason always repeat, or it's always recent?
It's sort of the same reasons repeat. One kind of reason which says that there are actually two papers, right? One is the theory part and the other is the infrastructure, which, you know, all the in-kernel library that George was building.
Right.
And then we have sort of multiple extensions developed on top of this library.
Right.
So RAID, and Borg and XS, and there were a couple of others. There was an encryptor extension that he wrote on top of Abel. So and then the theory is really also fairly deep, right? I mean, there is the detail. But then, because we're putting all of it in the same paper, we had to stop exploring the theory at some point, and then that leaves certain open questions. So the people who are more interested in the theory say, well, but this theory doesn't answer these. And then the people who...
So you will spin it now?
I don't know. That's one possibility, but that would mean that we need to do more work for the theory, and we need to do more work for the infrastructure also, because if we write a paper on theory, then we need to make sure that we explore it completely, right? Which we can, I think.
But I guess one thing you can do is to pick the one that is more complete and go with that.
I think they are about the same.
But you need a theory first.
The thing is, the theory...
Actually, I was thinking the other way around.
The theory maybe...
we are the opposite, the viewers.
Yeah.
The theory is maybe not... If just the theory may not be suitable for a systems conference. Right?
Mm.
That's the problem. That's why we had this other component, so we make it relevant to a systems conference. But that's not working.
Well, I mean, it's not a typical system paper.
It is
more relevant for the name.
I thought that ICAC would be the place where they would actually accept a paper like this, which has both theory and systems work, and it's about, you know, self-managing storage. Even those guys had systems and theory people in there. There was this guy from, I think both George and I feel almost certain that one of the reviewers who gave us weak accept was this guy from NetApp, John Strunk. I don't know if you know this guy, but he says that you should write a systems paper and send it to VAST and just focus on the systems part, not focus on the theory part, right? Then there are other guys who say, well, you need to work more on the theory, is much more interesting than the that stuff.
Right? Yeah, that's hard to, it's hard to make both happy, right?
Mm. Maybe we should have, for ICAC, maybe we should have just done a theory paper. That might have worked better.
Then you should probably work for the system paper first, submit to any of them.
Yeah, I think the problem is that George, he feels that that might be a lot of work because he has to write. I was suggesting him to strengthen the infrastructure part by, you know, one of the ways to strengthen it is by writing more extensions. So I was going to suggest to use the IODDupe as one of the extensions to develop on top of Able, because we already have the non-Able implementation.
Yeah.
So we just need to convert it into an Able implementation. Right.
Yeah.
But then that might not be enough. They might ask for more extensions. So, but even converting an extension that you haven't written into an Able extension can be challenging.
But that work is, it would be the same amount of work for doing the theory. In the theory, I think it's much more useful.
In the long run, probably, yes.
You know, this idea of what to stack, that's like a very fundamental, cool thing to know, right?
Yeah, I think most people agree that the theory is very interesting, right? They appreciate the theory, but then the people who are interested in the theory say, well, there are some missing things in the theory, right? So you need to fill in those gaps. If we fill those gaps, we cannot put any of the other part in because we ran out of space.
I think we should go with the theory. It's much more useful.
Yeah.
The question is, can you technique the theory to systems conference?
Why? You can submit it, but question is, will they accept it or
not? No, I mean, why wouldn't they? It's not a typical stuff, but where else would it go?
Mm-hmm.
Systems, just that it doesn't have.
Yeah, we need to really think carefully about this thing. I was suggesting Josh to submit to Lisa.
Is
is the large installation system administration. Because here basically one of the theory part is all related to the sysadmin.
I mean, like a very strong theory that could go to SOSP or something like that. Like, I mean, the theory is really, really strong.
Hmm. It could go to SOSP, yeah.
And give some small example.
Really strong.
Yeah, I'm okay with any of these options actually, but George, I think he's sort of getting impatient to get it published.
I won't get bored.
No wonder.
Yeah. It already got rejected 3 times. Which means that we're not doing the right thing the way we are selling the paper. We need to think about this more carefully. Yeah. Well, anyway, it's good you got the ICAT paper. You've been trying to do this for a while.
It was more than 3 times.